amazing, complicated, powerful Greek goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want games with gender equality, the best place to look is titles based on mythology. But I would love to see some more historical games that have something to do with women. The truth is, I think this is not because of misogyny on the part of designers. I think it's just because of availability. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of games take place in the public sphere, like military and trade and building games. That's all based on the public, if you know what I mean. And in a lot of ancient Mediterranean cultures, unfortunately, that's a space that women were excluded from.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're not there, that's just historical accuracy. That being said, there are lots of interesting women who did find ways to move through the public sphere. Like, we have records in Pompeii of wealthy merchant women who were engaging in trade and making money and then slapping their names on buildings the same way that business people at SFU downtown do nowadays.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a bit of a... It's a complicated thing because you both... If you want the games to be historically accurate, you both need better history, I guess, or more well-researched history.
Exactly.
But then you also want them to be characters that people will recognize, right? Yeah. Which is tough if you're drawing from history that already doesn't have a lot of women to pull from necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a feedback loop, though, where mm-hmm. people don't recognize certain historical figures because they're not in games.
They're not in pop culture. Yeah.
But, like, you know, if you get one character who shows up in a movie, then suddenly people, even if they haven't seen the movie, at least have an idea of who she is.
Recognize that person, like, and yeah.
I have a lot of bones to pick with 300 mm-hmm. as a movie in so many ways, but I do have to give it some kudos for making people aware of who Queen Gorgo of Sparta was, because that's a real person, and she's just as much of a badass as she was in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie myself.
Don't worry about it. You're not missing much.
It's very obsessed with the male gaze. We can say that.
Yeah.
It would be the first time I've heard of a Zack Snyder film that is left underwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this has been a really interesting talk. If people want to look up your thesis at all, is there a way to do that? I'm not sure if there's a way for people to look up, like, after it's done or anything.
Glad you asked. So when it's done, SFU Library publishes all of its graduate and PhD theses, so you'll be able to look my name up in the library and find me there. In the meantime, I do have a Substack. I have a blog where I talk about my research, and also it's also a space for me to put kind of cool tidbits I find that aren't going to make the final cut of the thesis. It's called a reception collection, and you can find it at, this is all lowercase, a reception collection .substack.com.
Yeah, you got an article here about the music in Gladiator, which we were just talking about the film, and all sorts of cool stuff on here, which you call Reception Radio, which, given that we're on the radio, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, those are like, the Reception Radio segments are sort of light little tidbits where I talk about music that has some kind of connection to the ancient Mediterranean, and then I also post longer analyses about other stuff. I have a deep dive about Downfall of Pompeii up on the site.
Great. Well, once again, that's receptioncollection.substack.com. Nina, thanks for joining us today. This has been really, really cool to learn about some board games and about how they represent ancient history or ancient mythology and how we see them today. So,
thank you, guys. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Craig. It's been a treat.
Yeah, it's been great.
Anything else you think people should know before we let you go?
Play Hades.
Oh,
it's
man.
My gold standard for how ancient mythology gets portrayed. It's so much fun. And if my thesis gets delayed or I have to take on an extra semester,
blame Hades.
Supergiant Games, it's your fault.
Yeah, a ringing endorsement from me there, too. Thanks again, Nina. We're going to play some more music here. This one is also local from a new record by Sade Awele, featuring Teyon Gibbs, who's also local. This is the title track, Space and Time.
Heads on, what? Let my head down, watch me grow through this phase. My spirit is ready to take up this space.
Foundation. You deserve more. Connected with an essence that can shake the earth's core. When we're in this moment, we can let the burdens off. I am grateful for this journey just to see how far we've come, huh? Light from God, or this all-enclosing spirit where this light comes from. Dealing with my demons when the path goes wrong. I am far from completion, but still I hold on. Let's go.
So tired of running and running away. So much of this life that I wanna embrace.
Welcome back to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. You just heard Space and Time by Sade Wele and Taylan Gibbs from the new Sade Wele record, Intuition, which came out this past Friday. Very good. And also Sade is a wonderful person. So you can go check that out on anywhere you stream music. Up next, we are going to hear a new episode of the RVF podcast for the Rendezvous de la Francophonie, which is an annual month-long celebration of Francophonie in Canada. We are going to hear the episode, which one is it today? The episode featuring Claire Marie Brisson, who hosts the North America. Oh, no, we already did that one. So we're going to do Ness Benamran instead. Who is the manager at Kootenai Career Development Services in the West Kootenai region in British Columbia. In this conversation, Ness talks about his childhood living in France, England, and Cyprus, learning and then relearning French, living in Barcelona, Spain as a young adult, and immigrating to a majority-speaking English region of Canada, where it is sometimes difficult to use his other languages. So, without further ado, here is that episode of the Franco Podcast.
Welcome to the Franco Podcast. Welcome to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast. There are many good reasons to learn a second, third, or fourth language. It can positively affect our cognitive abilities, improve our attention and task switching capacities, and slow mental decline as we age. It's even been said that to have another language is to possess a second soul. I interviewed 8 bilingual or multilingual people for this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, including Ness Benamran. Ness lives in the West Kootenai region of BC, but has roots in France, England, and Cyprus, and familial connections to Mauritius. He is a senior manager at a BC nonprofit and a former volunteer programmer and board member at Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson. Ness plays drums with a 4-piece alt soul group called Penny Shades. In our conversation, we discussed his shifting connections to language and home, learning and relearning languages, and the difficulty of keeping connected with his languages while living in a primarily English-speaking area. Here is our conversation. You speak several languages. Can you tell me about your linguistic journey?
Well, I was born in France, so the first language I spoke was French. And then my mom and I left France when I was 3 years old and moved to the UK. That's where my mom is originally from. She was born in Mauritius but raised in London. I learned English when we moved to the UK and forgot my French. My mom says that I rejected speaking French because I was outed in school a lot for, kindergarten, for being the French kid. And then we met my dad, my stepfather, who I call my dad, after all these years. And he was also raised in London, but he's Greek Cypriot. So we lived with him for 2-3 years in London, and then we all moved to Cyprus. And that's where I spent most of my childhood. I didn't leave Cyprus until after high school. And in Cyprus, I went to public school there and grew up speaking Greek and spoke English at home with my mom, spoke Greek and a bit of English with my dad, and then Greek, of course, in school and with all my friends. And then when high school was done, I left home. I moved back to France for a few years. And part of the reason was because I wanted to relearn French. And then after France, I started just drifting around. In my 20s, I lived in Australia for a year and backpacked around Asia for a year and then lived in Barcelona for a year. And I got to learn Spanish there. And then in Barcelona, I met someone from Canada. And that's how my whole getting to know Canada and then move to Canada and then move here to immigrate. That's where that whole journey started. I didn't actually realize I was going to live here. Like, it was kind of a last minute decision when the person who I'd met in Barcelona was moving back. And I was like, well, maybe I'll just come with you and check it out for a few months. Like, at the time, I had no idea it was going to turn into the place that I would, raise my own child, as it turns out. So I've been living in the Kootenays for the last 16 plus years. And yeah, this is definitely the longest I've been in one place at any point in my life, and also where I haven't had the chance to use any of the languages that I've spoke throughout my life before moving here, which has made all of them really rusty.
Actually, I have a question about Cyprus for you. Mm. What are the common languages in Cyprus?
Cyprus has three official languages. When it gained independence from the British in 1960, the government that was set up was made up of Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots and chose to have English as a third official language. It's quite common for Cypriots to speak English. A huge percentage of the economy also relies on tourism, so there's a lot of interaction with English-speaking folks. But the other two languages, Greek and Turkish, tend to be somewhat segregated. Turkish Cypriots that live in the and Greek is spoken predominantly in the south.
So you didn't have an opportunity to learn Turkish, for example?
No. And in fact, because of centuries-long conflict between Turkish people and Greek folks, there's no encouragement to engage with, Turkish culture at all in the Greek side of Cyprus.
You obviously had to learn new languages really quickly as a child. Did you have strategies that helped you to do that?
I didn't have any strategies myself. I know that my parents had a strategy, which was pretty simple and effective, as it turns out. And that was to just throw me right into public school, like right into the pool, so to speak, so I could be completely immersed in the language that I was trying to learn. And like looking back, I guess it makes sense. First, when I was 4 years old, and then when I was six, when we moved to Cyprus. But I have to admit, it definitely made for a challenging first couple years, both in the UK and then in Cyprus. I was old enough to have memories from when we moved to Cyprus, and I remember being in school and having the feeling of kind of like being in a inside a foreign movie. Like your life is happening around you, but you don't understand what people are saying. And this went on for like a whole year that I was in first year of elementary school. I have one memory of being in class. There was maybe 20 of us, 20 kids in class, and the teacher was up front delivering the lesson, and it was just another day of me having no idea what was being said around me. And I just got up from my desk, and it wasn't recess. I just went out into the playground because it didn't make any sense to just be sitting at this desk not knowing what was being said. So I just got up and went to play, and my teacher just let me go outside, and I was on the swings all by myself while everybody else was in class. And yeah, just having that feeling of, well, I have no idea what is going on around me. And that happened for a full year. Just everything was weird and foreign, from school to, I didn't really have any friends yet because, we couldn't talk. I didn't really start learning Greek until my family moved from the city to a small town in the mountains. The school was much, much smaller. Like it actually, it wasn't a town, it was a village. So the school was much smaller, way fewer kids in class. And again, I was the foreign kid that didn't speak any Greek. And my teacher took interest slash pity, I guess, on me, and would stay with me after school and go through the material of the day over again and get me to learn Greek and start learning the words. And by that point, I had been there for a year and a half, coming up to 2 years, and some stuff was sticking. And with that additional attention that my teacher was giving me, that's when I started really learning the language.
Did you start to speak Greek at home then as you learned it?
I did with my dad's. My dad's relationship to Greek was also interesting. So he was born in Cyprus and they moved to the UK when he was 5 years old. So he spoke Greek when he moved to Cyprus, but grew up speaking English. So then when we moved back to Cyprus when he was in his mid-30s, his Greek wasn't really strong, not like someone who had grown up in Cyprus or even gone to school in Cyprus. So even though in those first 2 years, like he helped me along my learning of the language, because I was, actually growing up in the country and going to school, pretty soon my language skills far surpassed my dad's. And his reading and writing in Greek was actually pretty poor. Like he could speak it, of course, and he got back into it once we moved back, but it wasn't, how shall I say this? It wasn't, educated Greek. It was just conversational Greek. And as a little side note, I keep saying Greek, but in Cyprus they speak a very distinct dialect. Cypriot is, it's different enough from mainstream Greek that it, the really heavy dialects that's spoken in villages can be different enough from Greek and use different vocabulary and slang and words that a person from mainland Greece wouldn't understand what's being said. And it's interesting growing up in Cyprus because in schools you're taught proper Greek, but speaking to folks, like even outside during recess, like you switch to Cypriot dialect. And it's, yeah, it sounds like an exaggeration, but it's not. It's different enough that it could almost be its own language. And in fact, when I was growing up in Cyprus, there was a bit of a movement brewing that was advocating for Greek Cypriot to be recognized as its own language. Remember, the main argument against it was that because it didn't have its own form of writing that didn't just borrow from regular Greek, that that was the one catch that was making folks opposed to considering it its own language rather than a dialect.
Do you think speaking several languages may have opened you to new ideas and made you a more creative person?
That is, yeah, that's such a good question, Catherine. I think so, yeah, I think so. I think one thing that happens with speaking different languages is definitely, yes, being exposed to different ideas and worldviews, even from how the language describes the world, you kind of get to see that there are different lenses to look through to understand how we navigate through this life, not to get too philosophical, but there's a lot of poetry and imagery and how sentences and words are put together in Greek. And I know English often gets a bad rep of not being as rich and poetic as, you know, maybe some of the romantic languages, which I don't fully agree with. But Greek definitely does have a very poetic way of putting words and sentences together, including when, including for, you know, swearing and describing things in a negative way. It can be very creative that way. So I find myself finding a lot more satisfaction in expressing anger, frustration, and swearing in Greek than any other language.
What do you love about being multilingual, and do you find anything difficult about it?
I love the fact that it allows me to relate perhaps more easily to folks that also speak those languages. And that relational piece that I'm talking about also extends to having a lot of understanding for the feeling of needing to navigate in a country that isn't speaking your native tongue. So in my line of work, I've worked in nonprofit that supports folks to find work. And when newcomers and migrants, some of the folks that we support, there's been a lot of, yeah, satisfaction in having an understanding for what that feels like, needing to, you know, set up your life and find work and build a social network without relying on the comfort and competency of doing that in your native tongue.
So anything tough about it?
You know, what's tough is realizing how much of the languages I've lost without the opportunity to practice them. And Greek is one that definitely breaks my heart the most. When I moved away from Cyprus after going to school there, and I excelled in school in Cyprus. I was an avid reader, and you know, I loved history and Greek in the way that we learn, you know, English and literature in schools here. I spoke Greek really, really well. I had a real strong command of the language. I don't mean to sound big-headed. I'm just contrasting it against today, where I can understand it perfectly, but to just switch into speaking Greek, like I would need to be immersed in it for a little while first. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. And every now and then, like I'll force myself to think in Greek, like how would I, and the words just don't come to me. And when I was moving away from Cyprus, you know, I remember having these conversations with folks said, you know, if you don't practice the language, you'll forget it. And at the time, because of being so fluent in Greek, like I just didn't realize that was a reality, that was a possibility. Same with French and Spanish. The area we live in just doesn't provide the opportunities to speak unless you really go out looking for it. Like, it's an English-speaking part of the world, predominantly, you know? So, yeah, that is, that's difficult, kind of, assessing my current situation and realizing how much of that skill I've lost and how much work and intention it would take for me to get back to the level that I was at one point in my life.
Do you think about it in terms of passing languages on to your child?
Yeah, that's a really bang on point. Yeah, that is part of the sadness. Bennett, that's my daughter's name. I do speak French to her and a few Greek words here and there, but it's not the same as when you're, feeling confident and fluent in it. Like, it is a little forced. And I mean, we don't speak French or Greek at home. So her mom, for example, has no context of what I'm saying. But yeah, I try to expose her to it as much as I can, but do feel limited in it.
So in a recent episode of the North American Francophone podcast, Claire Marie Brisson used the phrase, a language that feels like home. It sounds like Greek may be your language that feels like home. Is that true?
I would say so, yeah. And more specifically, Cypriot, especially since it is a dialect that's, very specific to that island. It's not, spoken anywhere else in the world. Like, there's not a huge Cypriot diaspora. It's highly unlikely to run into a person speaking Cypriot. I think I only have in Canada once. Like, I've run into a few Greek folks, but that doesn't really feel like home, like proper Greek, because Greece isn't Cyprus. There's a huge cultural connection, but it's a different country altogether. So one time, yeah, at a supermarket, I heard people speaking Cypriot, and yeah, those words are very well spoken, like a language that feels like home. Like, it instantly transported me to, and yeah, there was no hesitation to go up to them, and they were just as shocked as I was to run into someone in the Kugnis speaking Cypriot. At the same time, it's a little interesting because the whole concept of home is one that I struggle to pinpoint. I grew up in Cyprus, but I'm not Greek. I'm not Cypriot. I was, the foreign kids, my whole life in Cyprus, even though I was, I went to school there and all my friends were Cypriots. Like, no one's called Ness in Cyprus. Everyone's called Andreas and Konstantinos and what have you. You know what I mean? So the name and how I look, as soon as folks knew, met my mother, like, it was clear that, oh, you're not native born to Cyprus. So although Cypriot feels like home in the sense of that's where I spent my childhood, not so much that's where I'm from, with that sense of real belonging. And the UK doesn't feel like home. France doesn't feel like home. Canada feels like home, but in the way of how I imagine a lot of immigrants, feel like this is my new home, my chosen home, where I've now built roots. But yeah, it's almost a daily experience that I'm kind of reminded that, oh yeah, I didn't start my life here. People will bring up TV shows that everyone grew up with, and I'm like, no, I didn't grow up with that, So yeah, the whole idea of where is home is still a question mark for me. So there's definitely a very comforting familiarity with hearing Cypriot, but insofar as I consider it home in that full wholesome sense, there's still like something lacking there.
That was my conversation with Ness Benamron, who lives in the West Kootenay region of British Columbia. You have been listening to the 2024 Rendezvous de la Francophonie podcast, hosted and produced by Catherine Fisher. The podcast celebrates March, the month of the Francophonie, and it was made possible by the Dialogue Foundation, which has a mission to engage and sustain dialogue within the Francophonie and with all of Canada's diversity. This year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie partners and funders include the Government of Canada, the Linguistic Portal of Canada, the National Film Board, Air Canada, La Fédération